We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,476 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Emerson alongside Bruce Adams. Bruce, how are you?
Healthy and alive, doing well.
I'm glad to hear that. Unfortunately, this is going to be one of your last long podcasts, isn't it? You will come back to visit from time to time, I sincerely hope, and the other fellas hope too, yeah?
I'll come back from time to time, yeah. It's just with the way the economy's going and everything, just kind of needed to take a step back and focus more on making money, getting a job. And
how dare the economy's as best it's ever been. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's been doing great, hasn't it? It's just when we record, it's in the middle of the day for me. So that's right in the middle of the time when most people work. So
Bruce, we have to step back. You heard Biden. We have added, is 14, 15 million new jobs since he's been in office. So you should have no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, sure. Not to mention the fact that the average American is going to pay something like $500,000+ in taxes in their lifetime, something like that. So
surprised that's all. I know people that have already paid well over that, by the way.
You know,
those rich people that don't pay their fair share, you know, they don't pay taxes at all.
No. Yeah, this is the average American, and I think isn't the average something like 70,000 or something like that at income?
I think that's the average, yeah. And what's fascinating to me is you and I were having this conversation privately. Somebody please explain this to me. I mean, I talk to people over there that are in the U.S. they make pretty decent money, but they are having trouble trying to explain to me how to answer my question, because I asked you the same question. I said, somebody please explain this to me. How are a couple that have two children that have a combined income of $100,000, just on average, let's say, how do they have a mortgage, two cars that are less than 5 years old, and then they're on vacation? How is this happening? What is going on here? I'm looking at the consumer price indexes, and I'm looking at consumer confidence. I'm looking at inflation. How on earth is this happening? A vacation would be the furthest thing from my mind.
The only thing I can figure is they had so much disposable income that they're just cutting back on disposable income. But I have no idea how that's possible. For the income in my area, it's something like 20 to 25,000 is what you need to survive here.
Yeah, I come from a similar area over there. I mean, obviously, minus when I went to the city, but
sure.
When I grew up in the place that I grew up, it was about what you're saying. It was about that. And actually, even during that time, it was between 12 and 25,000. You could live decently.
Right. Yeah. It used to be that here too. But obviously with the way the economy's been going, it's that lower number is no longer there. But I have no idea how you can do that. Like I've said before, a loaf of bread, $8. And this is in, you know, the bread basket or the, you know, the prime area where
you guys have wheat fields, loads of them.
Yeah. So I don't understand why it's that expensive. At least gas is on the cheaper side here as an example, but things are not cheap. And the average family, family of four, I have no idea how you're making it with a mortgage, with, you know, paying off your car. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
I also saw, I've seen the videos of it. I haven't seen one in person because obviously I'm on the other side of the pond and they don't do that stuff here. But I did see, and I've had people tell me that now you can go to, say, like Walmart or something, and they're going to start charging you a fee for self-checkout. You know, those things that they put in like 20 years ago?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They're going to put that as a subscription fee now. So it'd be like $100 a year kind of thing, kind of like Netflix or something. And you can go through it now. So you see how they do that? They get rid of the cashiers and then they force you to do the self-checkout and then they charge you for it later down the line. But not only do they charge you for that, some places are doing this already. You get certain like discounts or something that go with it, right? But then you also have this option too. Buy now, pay later. So you can take your purchases, like your groceries, in like installments now.
Yeah. I mean, in some places, going in for a week's worth of groceries is still like $400. I mean, in some places.
I saw a video. Let me see if I can pull it, but go ahead. Yeah, go on.
I don't see how that's possible. Like, I don't know how they're doing it now. Family of four, when I was growing up, $200 max, the grocery store. Like, you're pushing it at that point. Nowadays, that same family of four, you're lucky to get out of the store with just $200 for that week.
Right. So I want to play this video. This is like 30 seconds. Okay. So this is a Costco in Canada. Okay. So Bruce, you have Costco's down there? You know, like the warehouse club, like a Sam's Club? Yeah, you do. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a Costco in Canada, the prices they're dealing with. And this is not all that much different from some places in the U.S. where I'm seeing. So take a listen to what this is for some steaks, some grapes, avocados, and some other things. Like this is what this lady is looking at. She was documenting all the prices in there for the key items that we would normally buy.
Shop with me at Costco Canada. The prices are insane. Three steaks are $70. A strip loin roast, $182. Prime rib roast, $169. Prime rib roast, $169. Okay, now this is amazing. Sushi at Costco. How did I have no idea? Totally reasonable price too. Okay, back to overpriced food. $11.99. Thing of grapes. Five avocados, $8.99. This was $450. I believe I got like 10 items. Outrageous.
So you can see in there, you've got some coffee, it looks like. You know, obviously this is like warehouse club style stuff. You got some chocolate chip
like
cookies.
Folgers coffee though.
Yeah, it's Folgers freeze dried. Taster's choice, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's just a few other things. Like that's literally it. So I think she got some chicken breasts and some keto wraps, and a few other things.
Mushrooms.
Yes, mushrooms.
Cereal.
Maybe some looks like some lettuce there, and some
ground
sushi.
Beef,
some
maybe.
Of that sushi she was talking about.
Is
and that's
sushi,
it.
Sushi, yeah.
That's it. $450.
It was like $14.
Yeah, yeah. $450 for that, and there's nothing in there really.
Yeah, there's really not anything in there. Most of that stuff you'd get through in that week's time. Like I said, I don't get it. I don't get how people are getting by. It's not like the wages have increased enough to compensate the price difference. Most jobs that were well paying jobs are still roughly in the same price range. Like the prices haven't, or the pay hasn't really increased. The pay has increased for the lower paying jobs, you know, like the starter jobs, entry level jobs, that has increased. But the other jobs that you, if it was normally like 20 years ago, you were getting like $25, $30 an hour, it's still $25, $30 an hour now. It's not really changed much in that sense. So I don't know. The prices of everything have gone up. Inflation is sitting around, if you include everything, right? So this is the shadow numbers, right? This is the stuff that isn't tracked. We're sitting in a range of like 24 to 25% inflation rate, but supposedly we're only at like, what, 12 or something like that. But don't worry, it only went up 3 or 4% this year versus the 9% last year. So, you know, nothing to worry about.
And after all, it's transitory.
Right. It's transitory. It just keeps going up. That doesn't stop.
No, No, it does not stop. And you know what else doesn't stop? This revolving door in the entertainment industry does not stop. I thought we would talk about this today. Nickelodeon. Does everybody remember that network as kids? Yeah, I certainly do. All of the TV shows and everything they put on there. Well, an exclusive today says that Nickelodeon was, quote, infiltrated by predators, according to records. Never would have guessed that, would you? No.
Never would have guessed.
The channel employed 5 convicted child molesters and 2 others were accused pedophiles to work on the sets of kids shows and be talent scouts. Good Lord. Are we surprised? No.
No, I'm not surprised. When I've heard some of the stories of some of the kid actors and some of the traumatizing events they've been through and some of the
some of these disgusting
stuff they're exposed to is.
Yeah. Some of these, like, take a look at some of these guys, Bruce. Right. Take a look. This is one of them here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Would you let some of these people around your kids? Because I certainly would not. Absolutely not.
Very trustworthy looking
people. Oh, yes. Yes, of course. You see this one here? This one right here. Mm. This guy was a Nickelodeon production assistant who had sexual contact with a 9-year-old. Now, after he was fired by Nickelodeon, they hired him first, and then he committed that act, was fired, charged, convicted, did time, and then Disney hired him.
How is this even legal? Shouldn't the companies be like some kind of legal recourse be against the companies?
Oversight or something? I mean, can we not have like you want to put one of these congressional investigation committees to good use? Haul these people in there, these network executives.
That'd be good. Yeah, that'd be a good start. But then again, these are the same companies that are putting on drag shows and promoting the transition therapy and those kind of things. So are we surprised?
No, not at all. And this one, let me see, was it that one? No. This guy right here. Okay, so this one. This was an HBO did a documentary on this, you know, kind of what goes on with these networks. Of course, HBO, I'm sure that HBO is probably going to get their pound of flesh at some point. Who knows? I don't know. But this individual right here is seen later. Yes. With this one, he was in his 30s at the time, and this other one was around 15, and they were having a relationship. So,
yeah, I've also heard stories from that individual as well. So,
yeah, so there's that, and then you had some where you got some fetishes that are involved here. They're like, this is really disgusting stuff. And this was all this. By the way, all of this was all over Twitter, and you had people that were following on Twitter at the time and encouraging this kind of degenerate behavior that was going on.
Yep. And that's the norm in those businesses, it seems like, because like I've said, there's been a few actors and actresses that have come out that were in, you know, and they talked about this. In fact, actually, that actress, Amanda Bynes, she's gone through a bunch of like drug rehab and like she's gone through some traumatic stuff. And I wonder, based on when she started going through that stuff and when she was at Nickelodeon, that was always my suspicion, was something happened while she was there. And it was probably something sexually, you know, sexual assault or something like that. And yeah.
And then they go on to work at Disney. And has anybody noticed the problem we've got over at Disney? Has anybody seen this? What a disappointment that whole empire has turned out to be. I don't think this is what old Walt had in mind, do you?
No, not at all. If you listen to some of the writers, and they have a very twisted view. They're very why? Okay, let's this whole LGBT agenda. I know we're talking about the sexual assault stuff, but let's just bring in everything here. Why do we care about what your sexual preference is when you're there to write movies or story? Like, why do we care? That should not even be part of the conversation. But obviously it is. So I'm not surprised. Very disappointed. The kids are supposed to be the ones that we protect the most. And here we are hiring sex offenders.
Do you want me to play the clip of the woman who's the new director of the new Star Wars franchise? I know you're a big fan of the series. I suppose I could kind of.
She's one of the ones that I'm referencing with the.
I suppose we're going to have to play it now, aren't we? Because of the reference. So There is that. But here she is. This is the new director of the new Star Wars series.
When I saw Frozen as a grown ass woman, I cried through the entire movie. There was just something about the relationship between the sisters, the like de-villainization of the classic kind of fairy tale bad guy, you know, the concept of true love being between two sisters and not a heterosexual relationship. Like it just, mm-hmm. it just destroyed me completely. And I thought, gosh, you know, I would love to make something like this. That is, you know, for lack of a better term, Disney, meaning it's something that like my parents would have allowed me to see when I was younger as a queer person.
Gotcha.
But I would have been able to understand as a queer person. And I think I would have had a completely different life. And so I really was inspired by it and was like, God, I would love to make a story like this. And so when I was developing this original idea to pitch to Kathleen, I thought, well, you know, it can't just be that, you know, when you're pitching Star Wars, you have to pull from what, you know, George was also interested in. Like, it can't just be like, well, I'm referencing, especially if you're going to set something, you know, during the High Republic or end of High Republic into prequels, you don't have the Skywalker saga. Like, you can't reference a character that was created by George and or Filoni. Like, you have to create your own new characters.
Yeah, I really liked the first part of that conversation that she was having there, talking about Frozen. She's promoting gay and incestuous relationship
to children.
That's what she's to children. Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely great. Not to mention the fact that she had her hand in some of the new Star Wars movies, and they're absolute garbage in my opinion. Rogue One is probably the acceptable one of the new ones. And as far as the TV series go, you know, Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, and what's the other one? Andor, I think, something like that. Those were all good.
I stopped watching after the release of episode 1, 2, and 3. So I watched and those were George Lucas. I watched obviously the, you know, 4, 5, New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. Obviously that, you know, 4, 5, sure. and 6. But they made them in reverse order because the technology didn't exist for them to recreate 1, 2, and 3 first. So they did 1, 2, and 3, and they were really well done. I really enjoyed those. Those were great. And to sit down and watch them all in order, you know, the anthology, it was actually something. But then once they started getting into these others, and I know you were talking about a couple of them that were okay, but I couldn't follow it after that. It turned into just this mess, and I just couldn't follow any of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a mess, and some of the newer ones are just it's just fanfare. Is all it is. And honestly, the characters were shallow. There wasn't really much character development involved. That said, the Book of Boba Fett, Mandalorian, those two had great character development and story. Like, that was good, in my opinion. I liked that. Andor was also a good one as well. If, you know, you're into the Star Wars universe. Side note, this was a fun thing that I just remembered. Have I told the theory on the prequels, the bad guy villain wasn't supposed to be Count Dooku.
Who was it supposed to be then?
It was actually supposed to be the Gungan, Jar Jar Binks. And
but he was like the friendly guy, the that was like hopping around. That one. How's that? Yeah. How does that work?
Well, the play was he was supposed to be like the Sith Lord that was constantly behind the scenes and playing the dummy, so that, you know, nobody would suspect him. But at the same time, he's there with the hero, pushing them into the traps, pushing them into. So he's always there kind of manipulating things behind the scenes. And some of the examples of this was intended originally, but because of the time period and everything, people, the Lucas and some of the other writers were concerned that the average person wouldn't accept having Jar Jar Binks, who looks like a good comical character, end up being the bad guy. They didn't think that would play well to the populace, which I think that would have been a fantastic twist, in my opinion. But anyway, look at the droids for the Separatist. They all have similar shapes to Jar Jar Binks. Look at the ships. Look at the, you know, the Dooku ship looks a lot like Jar Jar Binks. So there's Dooku doesn't show up at any other point in the series except for right there. And then they, you know, so Anyway, it was just a fun theory. This is supposedly known behind the scenes with the writers, but it's not publicly accepted.
Well, I guess it's one of those things that'll just have to go, you know, as a theory. It's just an unknown in the entertainment business. It's part of the fanfare lore, if you will.
It basically, that'd be fan lore at this point. Yeah.
On over to some real stuff. You saw what happened to the bridge in Baltimore. The bridge, yeah.
Yeah, that was quite the quote unquote accident that happened.
Yeah, this is basically what happened here. This is a time lapse of what happened when the ship approached. And you can see power loss number one coming here in just a moment. And I will explain exactly how this goes here in just a moment. And then or how it's supposed to go. We have a reboot. And then we've got black smoke that all of a sudden starts coming out of the stacks. And then power loss again. And you see how they're turning there? Yeah, they're making that turn way to where that turn should have already been made before that. And then all of a sudden, boom, hits the bridge and the whole thing comes down. It folds in like a house of cards. Unbelievable.
I mean, when you have I forget how many tons it was. It was like, was it like 70,000 tons or something? I mean, those things are massively heavy, moving at 8 knots, smashing into that bridge. I've seen video of like a tank nudging, you know, so a tank, this one was about 40 tons, just barely nudging, just barely tapping a parked car. And that car flies back a foot. Just from a little bitty nudge. When you have that much weight smashing into something, but to your point about that, when they first lost power, that's when they should have started turning left, not right, and they should have tried to go under the bridge at that point. But instead, they kept turning right and turning right and smashed into the column there. It did not look like it was an accident.
No,
based on that video.
No, I was talking to Marty on the phone earlier today and I said, no, this was not an accident. This was intentional. That was a strategic strike is what that was. Now, as far as to who's involved with this, I don't know, but it just seems kind of suspicious that that particular bridge was taken out. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, it was taken out. Why? Well, if you are shipping containers out of the port from Patapsco in Baltimore, your cargo has to go across that bridge. That is one of our main key shipping ports on the Eastern Seaboard, is in Baltimore. Most of our cargo runs through there. Also, hazardous chemicals. Over 90% of all hazardous chemicals that enter the U.S. from the Eastern Seaboard go through that port, and they have to cross that bridge. Now what's going to happen? Well, since the bridge is out, we can't ship them across that, or we can't truck them across that bridge anymore, can we? No, we can't. So what do we have to do now? Well, there's a tunnel that you can go through, and that's fine. There's no problem. You can run all the cargo and all the hazardous materials through that tunnel. You can do that. However, you see, there's just a little bit of a problem. You're going to have to go to the government to get those permits to be able to go into that tunnel with that hazardous cargo, because you don't know. It's a safety precaution, you see. You don't know that if you have a problem going through there, that you're just going to have all the proper paperwork in order to be able to cross through there in case there's an accident, right? You could have a big problem. Oh, and there's one other thing. You're going to need to have an escort for all the shipments of all the hazardous materials that you're going to be putting through there too. So not only are you going to have to line up all of the permits and then go through the proper waiting period and everything to get those as the shipper, now you're going to have escorts for all of these shipments that go through there. And you know what? You're not going to be able to make those shipments usually during the day because that tunnel is going to be jammed. So you're going to need to probably do this late at night. So now you're relegated to just, you know, when the traffic's at a minimum there, you're going to have to be able to just ship those through there at the all hours of the night now. Also, if you are a person that is, somebody that likes to have a new car every few years, you know, and leasing program or whatever, all of our cars that come through the U.S. from imports come through that port. So we're going to have a jam up of new cars now. So that's going to be a problem. So, yeah, there's that. And it just so happens that that is the bridge that got taken out. Huh. Strange that. Now the port is shut down. All of our shipping ports are shut down. Now we're going to have a jam up there again, like we had off of the pier at Long Beach. Yeah. With Mayor Pete. Yeah. During COVID, that kind of thing. We're going to have all that jammed up now on the East Coast. Then you have the best part about it. So now you've got Biden that says, oh, you know what? We're going to take the lead on this. We're going to make sure that the federal government is going to be responsible for building that bridge back. And that's no word of a lie. The federal government is going to undertake that. Now, let me see. The federal government is now going to pay for infrastructure on building a bridge. Well, I mean, we're going to have to run that through Congress. So we're going to have to pass that. So that's going to have to go through because Congress approves all of the infrastructure bills for that. That is not the federal government's responsibility of anything. That's not even a state problem. That is a city problem. Well, the city of Baltimore is flat broke because of Democrat policies. I'm not playing party politics. They've been in power there for over 50 years. The city's bankrupt. They're the ones that should be responsible, if any government agency should be responsible for rebuilding that bridge. However, in this case, I'm not saying that it should be laid on the city of Baltimore because the city of Baltimore is not responsible for that. The shipping company that pulled that off is responsible for that. Their insurance should have to pay for that. And I think it was a Maersk line. They've got plenty of money. There should not be a problem here.
Yeah, there's, to give it a little bit more, there's $80 billion in cargo that travels through the port itself. 140,000 jobs are tied to the shipping traffic there, just the shipping traffic. As you said, cars is one of the big imports and exports. But there's also... gypsum and sugar are big import exports
Domino.
There.
That's where Domino goes. Yeah. Domino sugar. Yeah. Everybody knows Domino sugar in the U.S. Yep.
Yeah. Which gypsum, that's fertilizer, drywall, and plaster.
Drywall, yeah.
Let's see. This says a record 52.3 million tons of freight went through there. And that was last year. Yeah. So the 1.6 mile bridge.
Gone. Yeah. And don't you worry, the federal government, they're going to build that back. Yeah. Do you know what's going to happen now if this is allowed to go on? If this buffoon that's up there at the podium there that mumbled and shuffled out the back door when he didn't take any questions, if this is allowed to continue where the federal government is going to come in and rebuild that bridge will never be built.
Well, I also want to point out this is coming from Biden, who also said he commuted over the bridge by train multiple times. There is no rail line over that bridge, by the way.
Well, now, Bruce, I think you're mistaken. There is a train over there that goes across that bridge. He said so himself. This is what he said.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware in our train or by car.
You see? Yeah, that's what he did. He took a train across that bridge.
Many times. Many, many times.
Many, many times.
He went over. Yeah. Yeah. That guy is the one that's saying that the government should rebuild
that bridge. No, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I don't think they're going to be. I don't even think they're not even taking part in any cleanup operations, are they? They might have the National Guard out there to. I think they had some helicopters out there to look for survivors, but I think that was it.
I haven't heard anything about cleanup or anything like that. As far as what the Fed's doing,
April.
But when you look,
April to May. Is what they're saying to get started on the cleanup.
Jeez. When you look at that path for the cargo ship that it followed, it's pretty clear that was,
yes, that was not an accident. Yeah, that was not an accident. Not at all. I was going to bring up the point as to that line that they take. So when you go into port, when you're headed into to port to offload or to take on cargo, then every ship knows, and I've been in that port and worked with the port authority on cases in there, so I understand how these ships come in and out of there. I've seen them do it 1,000 times. These ships all know, all these captains, they all know the same thing. When you come out of port, you're to swing around, and then you're to get yourself adjusted and be back in that channel before you even approach the bridge. That should have been done. That turn that you saw in the video right there at the end, even if that rudder was stuck, that still should have cleared that bridge because they were too far over. They were too far over to the right side for them to be. I was watching the video in reverse. They were too far over on the right side. They should have been further out into the channel, and they weren't. They didn't have to make that much of an adjustment. Even if the rudder was stuck, if they would have been out in the main channel, they still would have cleared it.
Yeah, it did not look like that was an accidental. And supposedly this ship captain is also... had a collision under his belt before this happened as well. Not sure what the collision was or any of that, but yeah.
Well, I don't know, Bruce. I mean, he looks like a good captain, doesn't he? I think he does. Yeah. He looks like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any problem there. And of course, the crew, you know, they were celebrating. It was a DEI crew. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it's no problem there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's according to some of the stuff I've been reading, that's actually the case. They had some DEI hires just before this incident.
Yeah. So what? We can't take boats. We can't take any Boeing airliners now. Might as well forget that. But yeah. So that port? No, that was not an accident. I'm sorry. Just looking at the way that played out, that was not an accident. To hit it like that and to take that out. That bridge. Now, a bridge like that, you have to do constant maintenance on it. Some of the people that were on there, they're the ones that are. I mean, they're gone.
We had filling in potholes and whatnot on the bridge.
Yeah, we had construction workers up there, and that, you know, that bridge, it was built, I think it was in the 70s.
77,
and, so built in the 70s, and so it's one of those that you have to constantly maintain it, and all the traffic that goes across there every day, you know, all the shipping that goes across there every day, it has to be constantly maintained.
Yeah, and the according to the commissioner there, they said it was up to code. Supposedly, it doesn't matter though, up to code or not.
No,
you had a 70,000 ton ship smash into it. It's not. You're not. That bridge was not going. I don't think there's any bridge that could have sustained that kind of an impact and stayed standing.
I don't know. There are some. I mean, I come from a river town in Ohio, so I mean, we had some pretty stout bridges. Of course, now, you know, it's got rust and holes in it and everything else. So I mean, who knows? It's the way that infrastructure is. There's been
70,000 pounds though.
Well,
that's a ton.
Yeah, in comparison, okay. I've seen oil tankers. You know, because we have oil barges and things like that. You know what they are. And I've seen coal barges, you know, because you got coal coming down the Ohio River, you know, out of Pennsylvania and stuff like that. And you've got oil coming out of the fields there. I've seen these things. And I mean, it's happened a few times where the barges have hit the bridge and they've closed the bridge for a day or two to get inspection crews out there and everything's been fine. But I have known those things to hit before. And it's rare. It is very rare, but it does happen. And it's never brought the bridge down.
Like I said, though, I mean,
of course, if it hits now, I'd say it's more likely it's coming down because of the poor maintenance. But yeah.
Well, and the thing is the way this ship hit, it wasn't like if it was a glancing blow, like if it would have just kind of it might not have taken the bridge down. The problem is this was not a glancing blow. They smashed straight into that.
No, it was a direct hit. You couldn't have hit that better unless you had a Russian cruise missile. No, I'm sorry. Did I say that?
Well, in this case, they didn't need one because, you know, it was just an accident. Yeah. Smashed right in, like square into that.
Yep. Right into it.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, something over like a billion or so joules of energy, kinetic energy.
All right.
The bridge is gonna come down.
Yeah, it's coming down. Well, it is down. Okay, so there is that. Yeah, the bridge. Again, my personal opinion based on what I see, and we're gonna have Marty on tomorrow to discuss that a little bit further. He was asking me about it on the phone today, so we're gonna be talking about that. I believe it was intentional. I believe that was a strategic hit, 100%. In my opinion, that is just my opinion based on things that are happening.
It was just as accidental as the Evergreen when it got stuck.
Yes.
In the Suez.
Yes. Just as accidental. Yeah, sure.
Just as accidental.
Yeah. Right. I did say something about a Russian cruise missile. Do you want to talk about the Moscow incident?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So terror attack in Moscow. Now, what's interesting about this is we had a long discussion about this in our prep session. We had an extended prep session today. If you're interested in hearing that, the link will be in the program description down below where you can take advantage of the subscription services that we have where you can get access to that. That's a whole other podcast in and of itself. We actually did almost an hour today. I think it probably work its way down, but I think that's probably about what it's probably about what it was. But this incident in Moscow, ISIS terror attack, and I say that very loosely. We looked at a lot of the footage and everything that's involved with this. We looked at the official releases, reportedly put out by ISIS. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for pointing out the actual terrorist group if they actually carry something out, but everything that we've looked at up to this point, and we don't talk about things right away. We like to let things kind of play out to where we can get all the details we can get before we start talking about something, because it's with the news today, it's not about who is truthful. It's about who's first, right? Isn't that what Musk says? It's the same thing. Ah, you got to be first. Doesn't matter if you're truthful or not. You got to be first. Well, you know what? Yeah. I don't give a damn about being first. I want to be truthful, and I want to give a good assessment, and I want to make sure that people have the best objective view possible, not hysteria. So we have the hysteria factor, right? The Russians made sure of that. we had the hysteria factor. But the closer we look at these things, something doesn't add up, does not add up at all. And we're not the only ones saying that. And I will reference another individual that was on another podcast, and people can go and listen to that for themselves and make their own mind up on what happened. My first thought was, okay, something seems off here. Something does not seem right. Obviously, you know, being the way that it is. So let's look at the chain of events that we have. And again, we'll be discussing this in detail tomorrow with Marty as well, because he's got firsthand experience on dealing with these radicalized individuals and seeing it firsthand in that part of the world. So we'll be getting his considered and informed opinion. But right now, we're going to talk about what you and I have looked at. Now, the incident took place in Moscow last Friday night at the theater, Caucasus Theater, I believe it was. If I get that incorrect, I'm not sure. I think that's the closest. But this is also the same theater. I wasn't aware of this. This is also the same theater that Trump held the Miss Universe contest in. I believe it was in 2010, I think. I didn't know that. But it is that theater. And also, the theater was then, after the incident, the theater was set on fire. Nobody knows how. Nobody knows why. And it took the police in Moscow over an hour to respond. There is a little bit of a problem here. Yeah.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yes. There is a little bit of a problem here. Maybe that, you know what, Bruce? Maybe that radio just wasn't working. Maybe.
Maybe. That explains it. Yeah.
Could have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, my first thought was when I first heard that it took the Moscow police over an hour to respond, I thought, okay, all right, that's there's your first clue right there. Well, we've had a few days to go back and review a lot of the video footage, and we found something interesting this afternoon, didn't we? Oh, yes, we did. So my first thought was, okay, this is an FSB op. It reeks of that, right? It just does, because immediately they were blaming Putin and everybody. They were blaming Ukraine and saying, oh, well, that's ISIS. They were on their way out. They were getting ready to go back to Ukraine. They had the whole thing set up. That's what Putin said. They had a window. They had irrefutable proof. Okay, well, there's a lot of things to consider here. First of all, what's going on in the Muslim world right now? Ramadan.
It's just a little bit of a party. Yeah.
Yeah. Ramadan. You're not going to carry out these kind of atrocities during Ramadan, are you?
Oh, no.
No?
Of course not. They don't do this kind of stuff during Ramadan. No.
That's the first thing. Okay. Second thing, the supposed terrorists were from Tajikistan. Okay. They were all Tajik nationals. They're in Moscow. This is another problem. I will get to that in a second. How many jihadists, right? ISIS terrorists, because that's who's to claim the responsibility. How many ISIS terrorists do things for cash? They all said the same thing. All their stories were the same. I went through and I listened to all the interviews that were released of them. All their stories were exactly the same, minus a couple of details here and there. Oh, they all blame Telegram, by the way, for organizing. Everything was universal with that. But they were to be paid a fee by some people that they met in Moscow. They don't know who they were. All of them said the same thing. They didn't know who they were, but they were going to be paid 1 million rubles, which is about 8,600 pounds, to do the job. Then they get in the car after they do this, and they run. How many jihadists do you know that are not martyrs for the cause? They get in the car and they run? That doesn't sound right, does it?
No, that doesn't. You got to get your virgins, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same group that would wrap their genitalia with cloth and blow themselves up, hoping that that part of their body would remain intact. So when they get to heaven and have their, however many virgins it is,
72,
that they'll have their junk still in place. That's the line of thinking that we have. And those same group of people are now taking up jobs for 8,600 pounds to shoot up a place and then run. Yeah, that doesn't fly.
No, no, it doesn't fly. And then the other thing that I mentioned, you're in Moscow. Do you understand what goes on in Moscow? Don't take my word for it. I'm going to list the individual that I listened to, Russian historian by the name of Dr. Yuri Felchinsky. He did an interview on something called the Silicon Curtain podcast with Jonathan Fink. You can find it on Spotify, and I would encourage people to go and give that a listen. It was about an hour and a half long interview, and he lays out exactly what he believes went on with all of this. And his take, I've read some of his books, his take is pretty clear cut in a lot of cases as it relates to this. You have people in Moscow. That entire city is controlled by the FSB. That would be the Russian security services. The whole thing's controlled by them. Foreigners from Tajikistan, which of course is a former Soviet republic, are in Moscow. Now, if you're a foreigner, then the FSB is going to know that you are there in that city. They are going to know. There is no way that you can carry out a terrorist attack and the FSB not know about it in that city.
Right. A bunch of foreigners come in, get access to firearms, a little bit of military kit, then are able to get that into a public venue without the KGB knowing about it. Or excuse me, right. The FSB.
Right. It's an honest mistake to make, Bruce. You know, they're in the same building. Yeah. They just changed the name on the office door there in the same building. But yeah, it's a typical mistake. It just happens all the time. But that's going to take place? I don't think so. You're not going to be able to do that. They may very well have been foreigners. I'm almost certain they have, because, I mean, what Russian they did speak was not very good. And some of them didn't speak Russian at all. Then you have, we'll clarify.
Those are the ones that they apprehended.
Yes. Well, yeah, those, yeah. The ones they apprehended. Yes, of course. Because the ones that actually released the video, if we look at the actual video that was released by ISIS, if we look at that, the official release from them, and you look at the height, the build, the kit that they were wearing. Oh, and by the way, they just conveniently blurred out all their faces and changed all their voice tones. They modified all, they scrambled all their voices. And if you look clearly, these people that they apprehended are very dark-complected, right? Even in Russia, this time of year where you've got snow all over the ground, very dark complexion. Even out there, they stand out. If you look at the ones in the theater, they are pasty white.
Yep.
There pasty is no white. Mistake in that.
And they also, they have a little bit of that macho man walk, if you know what I mean. The burly arms out a bit. And the guys that they apprehended, they're too scrawny, too small. They don't have that kind of a build at all.
No. And then, of course, you have the other thing that we noticed immediately. You caught it before I even said anything. The muzzle flash. That's not right, is it?
No. If you watch, depending on which ones you watch, you can clearly see the muzzle flash for the firearms. There is way too many sparks coming off of that. You might see with cheap ammo, you might see a spark or two every once in a while. It's not a common occurrence. This was like a smattering of sparks. It was like they had a sparkler that was going off every time they pulled the trigger. There was way too many sparks. What it looked like to me was they were firing blank rounds that had a full powder load, and the powder didn't have any kind of like a bullet to complete compression to burn off most of the gunpowder in the barrel. Gunpowder is fairly slow burning accelerant. So some of that was getting propelled out of the gun, and it looked like that's my conclusion on it, because it makes no sense for an actual gun with a real bullet creating that many sparks. I have never seen it. I've fired cheap ammo before, and I don't ever see sparks come out of my gun like that.
There was another thing that it just dawned on me, and I want to play this back really quickly. So we saw, and I'm speaking of that video, okay, where you're talking about the muzzle flashes. So if we go to the actual video that was released, okay, so I'm just going to pull it here, right? This is the one we looked at. So if we're to look at this, right? So going in, do you know what's interesting about this room that they go into here?
Well, for one, it's dark.
Well, it is dark, but these are all, you see the walls? Those are solid walls. If you go in there with a fully automatic AK and you start spraying, you're going to catch some ricochet, aren't you?
Yeah, potentially, yeah. Or at least shrapnel from it.
Something. So I don't see that working at all.
The other thing I want to point out, I don't know if this is a trend in Russia, but they do that here in the US, but the firearm that he's using is painted yellow. Now, it could just be that, you know, they just, I don't know, do that.
Well, that's the one that the FSB pictured during the official investigation as evidence that they recovered from the vehicle that the terrorists were fleeing in. So you see, you can clearly identify it here. So that's the one that they used.
Right. Clearly. But my problem with that is anytime firearms are painted yellow here in the United States, as far as like law enforcement or those kind of things, those are less than lethal firearms.
Then you have this, which is what you pointed out, which is dude getting knifed.
Dude getting knifed. It did not seem like it was accurate.
No.
Yeah.
So I don't buy any of this. Now, if that's a white guy. I don't care how much they blur his face. That is a white guy. You can clearly see.
He's pasty white. Yeah.
So I don't care what the lighting is in there.
No, it doesn't seem right. Like this does not, it seems too fake. It seems like there's too much. The other thing I pointed out in prep, I think it was the other day or afterward, whatever it was, when we were talking, the videos that we've seen of this, there was another video that was on a second floor looking down. Them firing those blanks like that, or what look like blanks, they make it so that cameras can see the gun going off from a further distance away. So like, it's almost like they're trying to be flashy about it, that, you know, the sound. That's the other reason you would want to use full powder loads in the gun. It creates the sound, you know, the full combustion of the round. So it's much louder than just the primer going off in a blank. It all seems like it's fake.
It does. Now, if that isn't enough, we got to looking at some of the other footage, right? So the footage from the lobby. Okay, so that was the one right there. That was the first slot that we noticed. Okay, so if we go back and we look at the fleeing people out of the lobby, what do we have here? You got people running away from automatic gunfire coming from the other side of the door. This is at the bottom of the escalator, right? So they're running away from that. And what do you have here? You have a police officer who is armed. You see his sidearm there, who is calmly walking with a canine while the rest of the crowd is running and there's automatic gunfire coming from a glass door behind him. Don't you think he should be, taking up position behind one of the columns, drawing the gun, getting ready to take aim on the terrorists? Don't you think? Not calmly walking the other direction.
If this were in the United States and there was some kind of active shooter scenario, not only would you have law enforcement everywhere in full kit, but they would have some kind of rifled firearm, like an AR or something of a larger caliber. And at this point, they probably would have already opened fire, and those glass doors would have been broken at this point. Knowing Russia and their tactics and the military training that they have, like with the Spetsnaz, who are supposed to be anti-terrorist, I have a hard time believing that they were able to, the jihadists were able to get into this facility, shoot up the place for as long as they did, and injure as many people as they as claimed, and killed as many people as is claimed. It seems a little suspect.
Well, Felchinsky had an interesting take, and again, I mentioned this in prep, and I tend to agree. The last publicly legal, quote, legal execution they had in Russia was during the time of the Soviet Union in the late 1950s. Up until now, they haven't had a legal way to publicly execute people in Russia, not since the dawn of the, quote, Russian Federation, since the collapse of the Soviet Union. So Felchinsky believes, and I tend to agree with him, he says this will show that it was an FSB operation if they pass the death penalty, if they do a an express on or whatever, if they fast track passing the death penalty for terrorists in Russia, then this is how we'll know. Because up until now, the security services don't have a way, not legally, to publicly execute people. And that would give them carte blanche at this point to do just about anything they need, to go after all political opposition and just claim terrorism on anything.
Yeah. And honestly, in my opinion, we don't even need to see that personally. For me, I'm already convinced with the video we just talked about, but also some of the other video that we looked through today in prep. It makes it look like it's even more staged. There's one caveat I could say to this. It doesn't explain away the sparks coming from the muzzle, but it's reminiscent of what we've done here in the United States with some of these shootings. They have someone that they're watching and is a potential threat. And then they take them off the watch list right before something happens. It's possible that these were people that were encouraged to do something like this. But again, there's discrepancies with the size of the people. There's too many discrepancies to say this was an actual real thing. And the people that they caught were actual real, like the same ones that did that. It doesn't add up.
No.
And then, some of the video we're watching now, they have what look like plants, shall we say, instigating some events. Like one blue shirt guy pushes over a woman and then starts photographing the woman on the ground. It just doesn't seem like they're. And then there's another one just sitting around chilling.
Who's laughing? This guy's laughing. He's sitting in his chair and he's laughing while gunfire is going off. Right. Another blue shirt guy. And what's interesting about this guy? Well, you see, he's the guy that was one of the arresting officers on one of the terrorists later that afternoon.
Still wearing the
same shirt. He's wearing the same shirt and the wristwatch. You can see it.
Yeah. And granted, the guy, like, he tried to cover his face, keyword try, but you can see enough of his face. The eyebrows are the same. The hairline's the same. The eyes are the same. What little bit of the nose you can see is the same. The skin tone is the same. Like, it's the same dude.
You couldn't make it up. So, yeah. Now, what does all of this mean? Well, of course, they're blaming Ukraine. And you've got Russian Foreign Ministry. And you've got these guys out of the Duma and the Security Council and everything else. What's his name? Petrushchev said today that it's 100% Ukraine. There's no denying it. And then you've got people out of the Duma saying that the U.S. and the U.K. are involved with this as well to carry this out. And so it's just it's an excuse. And Felchinsky said the same thing. It's an excuse to escalate is all that it is. That is exactly what they need. And you're going to see more of it. Now, what have they done by doing this? Well, think of China with COVID. They have given themselves their own alibi is all they have done. Now, if we're to believe Viktor Suvorov, we're headed into something called the Gray Terror. You're going to have terrorist attacks that are going to be carried out on the West by groups, proxy groups, that are not in any way connected to Russia. You see, they were just attacked. So
yeah, they're
victims. They're not responsible. Yeah. And there will more than likely be more of the same. You've got the Italian embassy today warning of more. You've got the French embassy doing the same thing. So this is par for the course. This is what they will do. This is what will happen. Now, if we're to go back and we're to look at the history of the Soviets' involvement with radical Islam, oh, we find some very disturbing things there, don't we? Oh, yes, we do. They took over that in the 1970s. Yes, they did. Which means, what better way to control an agenda than by running the entire operation yourself? It's the easiest way to do it. Now, giving yourself an alibi. The Chinese gave themselves an alibi with COVID, didn't they? They had to release it on their own people first before they brought it to us. Use the same tactic here. Why do I say that this is what's happening? Well, in order to understand that, you need to read the book Blowing Up Russia, which Bruce and I talked about that, also by Yuri Felchinsky. Go back and read that. That's a great book by Yuri Felchinsky and Alexander Livinenko. That was the guy, the FSB defector that defected to the UK. Actually, he wanted to defect to the US first, but we told him no because he had information that said that Russia was behind 9/11. Oh, we can't talk about that. Then the guy got polonium-210 put in his tea after that. We couldn't take him because that's a can of worms that nobody wants to open in the U.S., so the British took him. It's in the book. So his argument was Mohammed Atta, which was, and Konstantin Preobrazhensky, another FSB defector who came to us, we actually took him in the U.S., has also made the same claim. He's given interviews with Cliff Kincaid at the American Survival Institute. You can go and read these interviews. They're freely available online. He said that Mohammed Atta, which was Osama bin Laden's number two, was trained in Dagestan. So to go back to why this tactic was used, you have to look at the Chechen Wars. The same tactics were used back then. Do you remember the bags of sugar, Bruce, that we've talked about before? The hexogen?
Yes.
So the terrorist attacks that were carried out in Moscow, the bombings of buildings or potential bombings of buildings, where the FSB actually got caught, by the way. That was the other thing. They actually got caught with their pants down with it. But they were blaming Chechen terrorists in the 90s on this in order to escalate what was going on in not just the first Chechen war, but the second Chechen war. Felchinsky lays all this out even in the podcast that he just gave that I mentioned. Who was in charge of the FSB at that time? It was Vladimir Putin. You couldn't make this up. It's the same tactic. They're running the same playbook. We actually said this a while back when we were looking at all this. We're going through blowing up Russia. We're like, they're doing the same thing now. They're running the same narrative. It's the same thing just 30 years later. That's all they're doing. This is the same tactic. They're running the same playbook. It's just with different actors. That's all they're doing. The same people are even running it.
Honestly, at this point, it's no surprise. I am concerned, though, as you said, with the coming gray terror and everything. This is kind of the starting point for their alibi and everything. They'll easily be able to accuse terrorists. It's going to open the door the door has been open for a while for terrorist attacks. That being the southern border, it's been open for a while.
Yeah, but they can ratchet it up now.
Yeah, when that happens and they start ratcheting it up, which, by the way, the Baltimore situation with the bridge, I mean, no terrorist organization has claimed it, but that's a type of gray terror. I mean, that is a type of sabotage that just happened.
Yeah.
So there's other events that could be happening. And honestly, well, they're probably going to happen. And honestly, I'm concerned just as much about the terrorist attacks as I am the government, because the government is going to use that to remove some more of our freedoms. I mean, look at the Patriot Act. That happened when things were a lot calmer as far as what's been going on nowadays, how hectic and everything the political sphere has been. It was a lot calmer back then. And honestly, we all thought life was pretty good at that point, except for the part where 9/11 happened. Everybody was kind of shocked by that one. But imagine another event like that happening, or a large event happening. And what kind of bills will get passed and kind of restrictions will be placed on the average person again?
Well, we're going to need digital IDs to make sure that everybody's in line. You know, everybody's going to have to be sorted out that way.
Yeah, and that's on the horizon, I think.
And wouldn't you know it, Bruce, we just happen to have, we've got another breakaway region in Bosnia that is asking for Russian protection. It's strange how these things happen. You know, it just happened. It's called the Spraska. And they have their own parliament that they have formed, and they will convene tomorrow. And they're solely focused on the current security situation. That's what they say.
Current security situation.
Yes. So this is another split. It's another split that they're trying to engineer.
Things are getting interesting. We're in an interesting time right now.
We certainly are. Well, my friend, it's been a great conversation. I will see you on the roundtable with Marty and Ned later on in the week for subscribers, and first part of next week for non-subscribers. Loved having you here, and come back and visit real soon. So that'll do it for us for today. Thank you for being here today, my friend. Thank you to all the listeners. God bless everyone, and have a great evening.